Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back, episode 133, and this is a massive one as we are finally at UFC 308. That's right, 308 goes down this weekend. Abu Dhabi, Ito Pura takes on Max Holloway, and Hamza Chimaev takes on Robert Whittaker. Other massive fights on this card. I cannot wait for this. I mean, this weekend, first off, is going to be absolutely insane. Is the University of Minnesota's homecoming, so I'm actually going back to town. I'll probably see Lexi, of course, if no one knows, my girlfriend. We've had her on. She goes there. I'm also going to be seeing one of my roommates is coming with me. I'm going to be seeing my buddy Seth, who we mentioned sometimes in here, Steelers fan, former roommate, and my buddy Sean, who used to live here down in Mankato, where I live right now. Going to be nice. We're going to be going out on the town, but I missed all of our fun, all the festivities. You best bet we're going to have UFC 308 popped up on the phone. So, of course, your entire preview and prediction show goes down on today's episode as well. We're going to be looking at NFL stuff, all about NFL Week 8 predictions coming up. The Minnesota Vikings play the Rams tonight, so by the time you listen to this, we'll already know the results from, just to give you a little spoiler, the Vikings, they're definitely going to win. We're also going to be looking at some potential trades that could be taking place, courtesy of ESPN, updated scoring rankings for fantasy football, and a bunch of other surprises on today's episode. Guys, we're in for a fun one. Let's get right on in to it with, of course, how we kick off every episode of the Surprise Jab Podcast. Well, not every episode, usually all of them, unless we have special guests. We usually pivot from the regular format, but of course we always look at new UFC news, new UFC fights, and we have actually had 5 new fight announcements since we last spoke. I mean, we had 0 the last time we spoke, so finally I have something to work with here. So let's get into it. First off, going down to UFC Vegas 101, January 11th, we have a flyweight matchup between Jose Johnson and Felipe Bunez da Silva. Felipe lost his UFC debut earlier this year, and as for Jose Johnson, 1-2 in the UFC, this dude is a flyweight, 125 pounds, and is 6 feet tall. He is so tall, so big. I'll be interested to see how this one goes. I probably lean Jose Johnson for this one. It is on UFC Vegas 101. I'll be curious what that January 11th main event is. I'm just sad we're still going to the UFC Apex. Thankfully, all of November, except for one occasion, and all of December, we will not be going to the Apex. So only one more Apex visit this year, then we'll be good until, I guess, 2025, sadly. Here's an interesting one. Ikram Alkhasarov takes on Andre Munoz in the men's middleweight division on February 1st in Saudi Arabia. And this is absolutely massive, guys. UFC Saudi Arabia. And this is massive because Conor McGregor said he's fighting Dan Hooker February 1st, and I did not think February 1st lined up with a Saturday, and it does, which means this. There's a crazy world out there where Conor McGregor actually fights Dan Hooker on February 1st in Saudi Arabia, and this fight is already guaranteed to be on that card, but it would be massive if Conor McGregor actually fought Dan Hooker, and I do believe the UFC is crazy enough to do it. Ikram Alkhasarov, 2-1 in the UFC. Of his 2 professional losses, he is 50-2 overall. They are both to Robert Whittaker and Hamza Chimaev. Both round one knockouts via uppercut. Pretty comical, if you ask me, but I'm interested to see how he does. You know, he did just lose to Robert Whittaker, and he's taking on a guy in Andre Munoz, 24-6, 6-2 in the UFC, very seasoned. His only losses that Andre Munoz has experienced, I think he had one on the Contender Series, and then I know he lost to Brendan Allen, maybe his last time out. I mean, you know, this guy's beaten Ronaldo Souza, Uriah Hall, Junyoung Park. Andre Munoz is very talented. I'm excited for this fight. Good matchmaking from the UFC, and the winner will probably be looking for a ranked opportunity coming in their next fight. This one, UFC Tampa going down in Tampa Bay, Florida. Of course, actually, Tampa is Tampa Bay. I think it's just called Tampa, Florida. December 14th at the Amalie Arena. Lightweight division, Dracar Close takes on Joel Alvarez. I'm so used to saying Joel, but it's Joel Alvarez. Joel Alvarez, 21-3 with 21 finishes. 6-2 in the UFC. This guy's an absolute killer. Most recently finished Elvis Brenner. I mean, this dude is super talented. Also wins over Thiago Moises, Mark Diakise. Love me a little Joel Alvarez when he's fighting. And a guy in Dracar Close, only 2 losses of 17 professional fights, 15-2. Coming off a win over, I believe it was Joe Selecki, where he finished him with a head slam. He slammed him on his head and knocked him out. He's also beaten Bobby Green, Joaquim Silva. This is a fun one. Could be on the main card for Tampa. And the interesting thing about that Tampa card, of course, going down December 14th, is we don't know what the main event is going to be for that. As we look at the welterweight division, it is more and more looking like we're going to be getting welterweights on this card. I've heard, you know, people saying that Kamaru Usman could be fighting Jack Della Maddalena. I think that fight may be happening in February, though. There's also word that Sean Brady might be fighting Ian Garry. I've heard that Colby Covington actually ducked a fight with Ian Garry on this card. I don't know if that's true or not, but we'll have to see. But I'm thinking you're going to be either seeing Ian Garry, Sean Brady, Jack Della Maddalena, a mix of those guys, maybe take on Kamaru Usman. I don't really know. Other than that, there's no real rumors. Actually, the Umar Nurmagomedov is linked to a fight with Song Yadong at that card. Of course, the number 2 and number 8 bantamweights in the world. I'll be curious to see what the UFC goes with. Another fight that was recently announced, this one for UFC 310 going on December 7th. We will have the debuting Rizvan Kuniyev, 13-2 professionally from Russia, making his UFC debut. I believe he won on the Damage Contender Series. I don't know. He is a big boy, though. Takes on Martin Boudet, 5-1 in the UFC, 14-2 professionally. He wins over Chris Barnett, Andrei Arlovski, Jake Collier. Martin Boudet, decent heavyweight. You know, out of the unranked heavyweights, I'd say he's probably one of the better ones. But Rizvan Kuniyev, bro, this is a massive boy. This is a big, big boy. Well, yes, he did win on Dana White's Contender Series. I believe it was a round one knockout. I can't remember. Did they post about it? All I know is that he won, got it done, make his debut. I'll ride with him. He looks like a fun fighter. And the final fight officially announced, taking place on UFC Vegas 101, of course, January 11th. The first Apex card, absolutely hate that. Magomed Gadzhiyuzhalov, 9-0, 1-0 in the UFC, won his debut over Brenson Ribeiro. Will be fighting fellow light heavyweight Bruno Lopez. Bruno Lopez making his UFC debut, 13-1 professionally. He actually holds a knockout win over Gregory Rodriguez, RoboCop. We love him in the UFC. I'm excited for that one. I probably favored Magomed Gadzhiyuzhalov. Gosh, his last name is so confusing. Big on grappling, though. Okay, he grappled his way to victory. It was a somewhat entertaining fight, though. So we'll have to see what takes place. But I mean, honestly, some decent fights being announced. I'm here for it. I love it. We always love a little new UFC news. I still await the UFC Tampa main event. That's coming up sooner or later. The November schedule kind of being put together fully, so I don't know if we're going to get any new fights there. But around in October this weekend, and October was a decent month. I'll say October was a decent month. I'll tell you else who has been doing decently, and that is a lot of performers in fantasy football. And when it comes to fantasy football this year, we have been keeping track week by week of the top 10 fantasy scores per position. Of course, we got quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, defense / special teams, and kickers. And every week, we now look at who's been moving up and down in the rankings and who has kept their spot. So let's check it out from last week, week 7. I know we're a bit late as this is our week 8 prediction show, but you know, I've had a very busy week and more busy weeks to come. First off, quarterback, no changes at the top 3. Lamar Jackson, still the number 1 guy. I mean, he could really go for back-to-back MVPs. I kid you not. This Ravens team is better than the team last year. Derrick Henry has been an absolute beast, and Lamar has just shined. In 1 week, he's passing to Zay Flowers. 1 week, he's passing to Isaiah Likely. 1 week, he's passing to Rashad Bateman. 1 week, Mark Andrews. People can't keep up with him, and he can run the ball. Lamar Jackson's still number 1. Baker at 2. It's going to probably dip. Okay, Baker Mayfield's run at the top might go down a bit, losing Mike Evans, losing Chris Godwin. We'll have to see, but this has been an incredible start. Halfway through the year, just about, and Baker is the number 2 fantasy QB. At number 3, Jaden Daniels, current leader for Rookie of the Year. The tragic stuff is he did get injured his last matchup out, so he is probably going to drop a bit with Marcus Mariota coming in. We'll have to see. I know I would much rather see him dip in fantasy than see him dip in real life, so go cautiously, Commanders. At number 4, Josh Allen. He was number 5 last week. He switches places with Joe Burrow. Josh Allen having a big old, did they win? I can't even remember what the matchups were, but Josh Allen, another 20-point performance, doing what he needed to do, getting it done. I believe it was against the Titans. As for Joe Burrow, Bengals still trying to work their way back from that terrible 1-4 start. Joe Burrow at 5, still pretty good. Kyler Murray jumping 2 spots from last week up to 6. Cardinals, you know, it's hit or miss with them sometimes, but Kyler Murray, he's been great in his return year. At 7, Geno Smith. I think this is his third straight week at 7. Probably one of the most consistent quarterbacks in the NFL. And number eight, Brock Purdy. Despite losing to the Chiefs, was that, I believe the Chiefs game was last week, Brock Purdy moves from 9 to 8. And sadly, dropping three spots is Justin Fields. That's because he was benched for Russell Wilson. Crazy move by the front office or Mike Tomlin, whoever made it. And number 10, Jalen Hurts. Finally getting back into the top 10. I love me a little Jalen Hurts. At running back, Derrick Henry, still number one. At number two, Alvin Kamara. At number three, Saquon Barkley. And finally, a change. At number four, Breece Hall, going from 7 to 4. Breece Hall finally having some breakthrough games with the Jets. He was rated the number one running back coming into this. He's been absolutely amazing. Henry at one, no shocker there. At two, Alvin Kamara. And at three, Saquon Barkley. Those two have just been so consistent, so great on their teams. Some weeks it's hit or miss, but more than not, they are consistently putting up big point totals. At number five, Kyren Williams does drop one spot since Breece Hall passed him up, but Kyren Williams is still the number one option for the Rams currently. Cooper Kupp is coming back tonight, so we'll have to see how he performs. At number six, jumping two spots, Bijan Robinson. Finally, him and Breece Hall, they were talked about as the two young gun, two second and third years, getting it done this year. And finally, Bijan's been getting some touches in as Kirk O'Chain's been having an interesting time. At number seven, Jahmyr Gibbs breaking into the top 10 with a massive 32-point week against the Vikings. So, Jahmyr proving to be the better backfield from last week, putting up a lot of fantasy points. And number eight, Kenneth Walker finally breaking into the top 10. Kenneth Walker dealing with some injuries, but man, when he's hot, that Seahawks running back can go. And number nine, Chuba Hubbard dropping down to number four. Sadly for Chuba, he is just on a Panthers team that sucks so much. He's the only bright spot. And number 10, Jordan Mason did get injured, had a kind of an off game too, so he's down from 6 to 10, jumping four spots. But Jordan Mason still having an amazing year with the 49ers, one of the brighter spots of this season. At wide receiver, Ja'Marr Chase passes up Chris Godwin from 2 to 1. Ja'Marr, man, him and T. Higgins, they're a dangerous combo. I'm honestly scared whenever I play Ja'Marr Chase. And as for Chris Godwin, his season's over. His season's over. It's absolutely awful. It's absolutely terrible. Another injury facing him in this career. It's just, it's terrible. I mean, I don't have him in any leagues, but still sucks to see. Number one fantasy wide receiver is now out for the year. Absolutely awful. Number three, Drake London jumping two spots. I mean, it's clear to see Drake London is Kirk Cousins' guy. And man, he's been putting up touchdowns. He's been putting up 150-point receiving games. Gets a ton of touches. Drake London, number three wide receiver in the game. JJ going from 8 to 4. That's right. When Justin Jefferson is not on a bye week, he's the best wide receiver in the league. And I'm expecting him to go off against the Rams tonight. Mark my words. At number five, Garrett Wilson, jumping two spots. I mean, what do you know? Aaron Rodgers, despite having Devontae Adams, still connecting with Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson puts up a ton of touches. Not as much touchdowns, but yardage, touches, does what he needs to. This doesn't surprise me. At number six, for the second straight week, Stephon Diggs. CJ Stroud loves to connect with Diggs. And even when CJ isn't doing too hot, Stephon is still getting it done. At number seven, Jaden Reed drops three spots. I mean, Romeo Doubs, Dontavian Wicks, there's just a lot of love to go around on that Packers team. And as good as Jaden Reed started the year, it's just clear that there's not a wide receiver one on this Packers team. It's a weekly toss-up on who Jordan Love wants to throw to. And number eight, Brian Thomas Jr., the only rookie in the top 10. That is right. At number eight, Trevor Lawrence, his favorite guy to throw to and one of my favorite wide receivers in the league because he's on my fantasy football team. I love Brian Thomas Jr., my favorite draft pick. I know Brock Bowers is super good. We'll talk about him in a second, but Brian Thomas Jr., love that guy. And number nine, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Finally, Amon-Ra's gotten over that early game slump. He's finally in the top 10. Even when I play him, even when I have him in for me, he's putting up tons of points. I'm rooting for him no matter what. And I hate the Lions, but I just like Amon-Ra for some reason. I like him. At number 10, Nico Collins drops seven spots. Sadly, still injured. Injuries this season, man, hurting all the top wide receivers. Hopefully, we can see him back in action. Moving on to tight end Brock Bowers. I mean, he's the Sam Laporta of this season. I mean, Brock Bowers, we knew he was the best tight end coming out of college. We knew he was one of the best ever. The next Rob Gronkowski, the next Tony Gonzalez, the next Mike Ditka. But I mean, he's just incredible. Moving from 2 to 1, I mean, he gets so many touches. He gets so many touches. There were 21 completions last week for the Raiders team. 10 went to Brock Bowers. I love having him in for fantasy. Now, number two, George Kittle. I mean, hey, Bowers has had a better week, and Kittle was the number one option for the 49ers. Still one of, if not the best, tight ends in the NFL. We do love ourselves George Kittle. He's a personality. And number three for the second straight week, Cole Kmet. I mean, he's old, reliable. Caleb Williams actually likes to throw to him. And Cole Kmet has always kind of been in this position, even with Justin Fields. He just always seems to get open, always seems to get touches, get yards, get touchdowns. He's reliable. And number four, Tucker Kraft, moving from 5 to 4. Good for him. Caught another touchdown last week. Jordan Love likes him. And number five, dropping from 4 last week, Trey McBride. I mean, second year for Trey. Everyone's high on him. Everyone expects things out of him. And the Cardinals rely on him, too. And number six, Hunter Henry, back in the top 10. Wasn't in there the week before. Hunter Henry is, honestly, I kid you not, 0 points or 24 points. Like, there's not even an in-between. There's just not an in-between. Hunter Henry is either he's going to be super reliable for your fantasy team or he's going to be the reason you lost. That's just how it goes. And number seven, Kyle Pitts, moving up 2 spots from last week. Good for him. Good for Kyle Pitts. Finally has a good quarterback throwing to him, and this tight end is finally in the top 10. Good for Kyle. And number eight, Isaiah Likely dropping 2 spots. Mark Andrews just took over. 2 touchdowns for Mark last week. And now Isaiah Likely finds himself ranked at number 8. But he is tight end 2. All right. Of the top 10 tight ends in the league, only Isaiah Likely is the tight end 2 that's in here. And number 9, Zach Ertz. He had a big week, was not in any of the previous top 10s for the whole year, and now he's at number 9. And Pat Freiermuth dropping down to number 10. Russ just wasn't really connecting with Pat Freiermuth, so he didn't get too many fantasy points, but I think he's still one of the better tight ends we got. Moving on to defenses, Broncos having a massive 21-point outing. Holy cow, they move from 4 to 1. Broncos, number 1 defense in the league. And number 2, Minnesota Vikings. You know, even if we're losing to the Lions, we still have one of the best damn defenses in the league. You know it. At 3, the Packers. I mean, our divisional rival, also pretty good. And how about the Bears? They do drop 3 spots, but I believe they were on a bye, if I'm not incorrect. So that's the only reason there. But there you have it. Vikings at 2, Packers at 3, Bears at 4. NFC North, we run the defensive spectrum. At number 5, the Steelers. They were there last week. They have a good defense. I like them. Number 6, same for the 49ers. You know, despite giving up 28 points to the Chiefs, the defense still looks good. Good for the 49ers. Checking out number 7, the Texans, moving up from 10 to 7. They had themselves a nice performance last week, one of the brighter spots for that Texans team. Giants at 8. I mean, Giants defense will be the Giants defense. Their offense is pretty mediocre. Bills defense getting into the top 10 at 9, and Seahawks defense getting in at 10. That 7 to 10 range is going to fluctuate all season, but I think the top 6 has been pretty locked in to start out the year. Checking out our kickers around us out. Chris Boswell moving up. I mean, how about it? I got Chris Boswell in multiple leagues, and he's the number 1 kicker. I love him. Austin Siebert, Commander's boy. I mean, come on, jumping 3 spots from 5 to 2. He had a massive outing, and Brandon Aubrey just had such a lead despite having a bye. He's only down to 3. I predict he'll get back to the number 1 spot. Kai Fairbairn drops down from 3 to 4. Siebert just had way more points than them. Will Lutz for the Broncos put up all their points, essentially. He moves from 8 to 5. Good job for Will Lutz. Finding a home in Denver. Young Hoku drops 2 spots. Falcons just didn't really have a lot of kicking options for him, so no points for him. Justin Tucker moving from 10 to 7 this week. Tucker finally getting back to the mantle he was meant to be at after a rough start to the season. Chase McLaughlin for the Bucks drops down 2 spots. They just got behind early. Their 2 touchdowns, they didn't even think to kick an extra point. They just went for 2, so Chase, unfortunately, was not getting opportunities. Will Reichard, coming off that Vikings bye, goes from not ranked to number 9. Look, he is one of the best kickers out there. Love him. Great rookie season with the Vikings. And Cameron Dicker, at 10, scored all 15 points for the Chargers. How about that? I'd be embarrassed. But yes, those are your updated fantasy football rankings for week number 7. I'm always excited to do this. I do it on Tuesdays, usually in class or at home, and it's always fun to see what changes took place. It really is always interesting, and there's always changes going on in fantasy football every single week. But let me tell you some other changes that could be taking place as the NFL deadline for trading does approach sooner rather than later. I believe it is November 5th, so is that election day? Is November 5th election day? I gotta know when I vote. I gotta make sure to vote. Go out there, hit the polls, get your votes in, vote for whoever you want, and also let me know if you're gonna be voting yes or no on these trades, which we are going to be talking about. And I was supposed to do this on the last episode, but I was not able to record the last episode until super late at night, so I decided to take this segment out. But we will be looking at potential trades for the NFL before the trade deadline in 2 weeks, and we will be yay or naying them. Now, this was a trade I would have yayed. It actually took place as the title Titans were to get a 2025 fifth round pick and the Chiefs would get DeAndre Hopkins. And lo and behold, the Chiefs actually ended up getting DeAndre Hopkins and they traded away, I believe it was a sixth round pick or fourth round pick, but somewhere in that range. It just makes complete sense. Rashee Rice is out. Isaiah Pacheco's out. They bring in DeAndre Hopkins. He's a deep ball threat. He was doing nothing with the Titans since joining them. He chased the bag, got done. Just all of his achievements he was having with the Texans and Cardinals going out the drain. But now he's with Patrick Mahomes. I think a connection is in order, and I think he will be much better. And I think the Titans just need to move on. Titans are in a rebuild right now. They got Mason Rudolph starting. It's pretty rough. But we will yay that trade, and it did happen. So there you have it. Another trade for you. The Lions add a short-term pass rush assistance. The Jets would get a 2026 sixth-round pick. The Lions would get edge rusher Hassan Reddick. And I know Hassan Reddick was actually holding out on a contract or something, but that was recently fixed. I don't think this is going to take place. I honestly don't. I know that Aiden Hutchinson is out for the year. But I think the Jets, you know, they just got Davante Adams. They just got rid of their head coach. I don't know if the Jets are going to make any more moves, really. Hassan Reddick, I think they're going to try and keep him. They already have a solid defense already. So I'm going to actually nay this trade. Would it help? It would help the Lions, but it would definitely not help the Jets. So nay for me. Dolphins deal for a QB with high upside. The Panthers would get a 2025 fourth round pick. The Dolphins would get Bryce Young. I would have said yay to this, but it was recently announced that Bryce Young will actually be starting this Sunday for the Panthers. I think the Panthers are going to ride out Bryce Young. I don't think they're going to give up on him. I mean, look, the Bears gave Justin Fields three seasons to see how good he would be. They're not giving up on Bryce Young just yet. And as for the Dolphins, Tua's coming back, whether he gets another headache or whatever, but I do not think. I'm going to nay this trade, and I don't even like it in the first place. Chargers take a chance on a young cornerback. Commanders would get a 2025 fifth-round pick. The Chargers would get cornerback Emmanuel Forbes and a 2025 sixth-round pick. This is tough because the Commanders' team overall is completely better than last year. I don't know if they'd even want to give up their Emmanuel Forbes. I mean, he's been doing pretty good. Chargers could try and entice them with something higher than a fifth, but I just don't see them accepting this. I'm actually going to nay this trade as well. I just do not see that taking place. Here's another one for you. Cowboys move for a running back with intriguing tools. Bears get a 2025 sixth-round pick. Cowboys get running back Khalil Herbert. I actually think they should do this. Khalil Herbert is serving no purpose on this Bears team, and the Cowboys are in desperate need of a running back. Dalvin Cook didn't work out. Ezekiel Elliott is washed. And Rico Dowdle just can't thrive. Rico Dowdle is meant to be a backup running back. Khalil Herbert had some attempts with the Bears, could never really break through. DeAndre Swift is just completely proven he is a reliable running back one. And Rashawn Johnson, a reliable running back two. I like this trade. I'm going to yay it. I don't know if Jerry Jones will like it. You know, they were trying to get Derrick Henry, but they weren't able to. I would try and get Khalil Herbert. I just don't know if the Bears are going to accept a six-round pick for him. I don't really know how that front half works. Steelers snag a veteran wide receiver after missing on others. Jets would get a 2025 seventh round pick. Steelers would get Mike Williams. Now, this is interesting. This is very interesting because with the acquisition of Davante Adams, Mike Williams has gone from wide receiver 3 to wide receiver 4, maybe borderline 5. Okay, so, you know, it's actually going to be Garrett Wilson. It's going to be Davante Adams, and then it's going to be Allen Lazard. And then Mike Williams, if he's out there, you know, I already know Rodgers is not too happy with him. I just don't know if the Steelers are going to use him, you know? I mean, the Steelers wide receiver core isn't the best ever. I mean, it's pretty much just George Pickens. But, I mean, it's pretty much if you want to go for the passing game with Russ or the running game with Justin Fields. I just don't see Mike Williams fitting in with the Steelers team, but I also do kind of see the Jets dealing. So I'm actually going to say that this is a yay, but I am a bit lenient on it because I just don't really know if it benefits both of the teams. We'll have to see. Saints bring in a familiar face along the O-line. The Raiders would get running back Kendre Miller. Saints would get offensive tackle Andres Pete. Raiders desperately in need of something. I mean, Zamir White and Alexander Mattison both are not really working out. I would say bringing in Kendre Miller could spice things up. Maybe just give Mattison a bit of a kick to perform even better than he is. I mean, he already passed up Zamir White for the starting running back position. And as for the Saints, I mean, they just, you know, Derek Carr gets hurt. Kamara just, he's hit or miss on if he can carry the team on his back. I'll yay this trade, but I don't know too much about Andres Pete. I do think the Raiders do give up a decent amount of sacks, so we'll have to see. 49ers require a running back to help with injuries. Dolphins will get a 2025 sixth-round pick. 49ers would get Jeff Wilson Jr. and a 2025 seventh-round pick. I mean, honestly, they could do this. Devin Achane, Raheem Mostert. It's crowded enough. Jeff Wilson Jr. doesn't really serve a purpose. 49ers, I mean, out goes Christian McCaffrey. Mason's doing good. Jordan Mason's doing good. He's been dealing with some injuries. So, and Jeff Wilson used to be on the 49ers. Could reunite them. Isaac Grando, the rookie, he's been doing okay. You know, he's been doing okay. And even Patrick Taylor Jr., he's been in the mix for them. And, I mean, Matt Breida, he's a free agent as well. I'm going to nay this. I just don't think the 49ers are going to be going for Jeff Wilson Jr. And Dolphins don't even know what they're doing with their entire team. Chargers upgrade their wide receiver depth. Cardinals get a 2025 sixth-round pick. Chargers get wide receiver Zach Pichel and a 2025 seventh-round pick. I could see the Cardinals doing this. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is pretty much wide receiver one. You also have Dortch in the mix. Pascal just doesn't do anything. He was better with the Colts than he was with the Cardinals. And Chargers, Chargers have just no wide receiver core. I mean, J.K. Dobbins has proven to be an excellent addition. Ladd McConkey's going to be great. But other than that, I mean, Quentin Johnson, he's okay. I'll yay this trade for them. I just don't know if it really excels either team to the next level. So we'll talk about, what should we do, two or three more? Colts fill a cornerback need with a former top 25 pick. Bills get a 2025 sixth-round pick. The Colts get cornerback Kaiir Elam. Now, Elam doesn't necessarily, like, completely transform the Bills' defense, but he is an asset of theirs. And I don't know if you want to trade someone you drafted in the top 25 to someone that's going to be coming in round number six. So I'm going to nay this. I also don't really think the Colts are looking at this realm of their team to improve. They definitely have some other aspects to look at. And I just don't know if the Bills are going to be willing to give him up for nothing much. Eagles add injury insurance at tight end. Bengals get a 2026 sixth-round pick. Eagles get tight end Tanner Hudson and a 2026 seventh-round pick. I mean, I guess Dallas Goedert, you know, he deals with injuries sometimes. I don't really know if the tight end issue is the problem for this team. It's keeping A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith healthy, making sure Saquon and Jalen Hurts are on the same page. I mean, I'm going to nay this. I don't even know who Tanner Hudson is. The Bengals also might want to keep them just because. I don't really know. It's up in the air. And one more trade to yay or nay. The Chiefs boost their running back depth chart. Panthers get a 2025 sixth-round pick. Chiefs get running back Miles Sanders and a 2025 seventh-round pick. I love that trade. I think Panthers need to blow everything up. Truly. They tried to bring in some weapons this year. You know, Adam Thielen, Deontay Johnson, Xavier Leggett. It is not working. Okay, Leggett can work, but Deontay Johnson, get him out of there. Adam Thielen, send him back to Minnesota. I mean, you used to blow up the team in Carolina, all right? From 2015 onwards, it has just been a disaster. Ever since you made it to the Super Bowl, it's been a downward spiral to a point now where they are still the worst team in the league. And there's a lot of worse teams in the league that they are just one of the worst. And Miles Sanders joining a Chiefs team that will not be getting Isaiah Pacheco back, that, you know, Cody Steele, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they cannot find that realm of their game. Chiefs haven't really needed it. Their defense has been amazing. Patrick Mahomes still is a stud, even if he's putting up average results. I think this team could really benefit from getting Miles Sanders, and they probably put him to work. So I'm going to yay this trade as our final yay or nay for NFL trades to make before the deadline. I kind of hope ESPN posts some other ones that I can look at, because I really like this idea of potential trades and going over them. So exciting stuff to be looked at. But let's get into it, guys. NFL Week 8 predictions. I did okay last week, but I'm yet to win a week. I'm yet to win a week of picks with my school, with my friends, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it, guys. It's honestly, it is pissing me off. I cannot fathom that I'm not doing as good as I did last year. I was great last year, all right? I was so amazing. But we're back. We're here. Your official NFL Week 8 quick picks. Let's get right on into it. First off, the Minnesota Vikings take on the Los Angeles Rams. Minnesota is a -150 favorite. Rams are the +130 underdog. Minnesota Vikings, you know, they're my team. Those are my boys, my dogs, if you will. You know, and I always see those things where it's like, oh, really, you're stuck in the rat race and you care more about a sports team than getting out of being broke. Well, guess what? Maybe I enjoy watching the Minnesota Vikings team that really puts in effort. Like, they're an inspiration. 5-1, second in the NFC North. We're tied for second in the freaking league, okay? We're coming for revenge. We got one of the best defenses. I think it is the best defense. We're out for blood. And the Rams, 2-4. Yeah, you get Cooper Kupp back. But they're 0-3 on the road. Wait a second. Are we on the road for this one? All right, Vikings are on the road. I just realized it doesn't matter. We have not lost on the road yet this year. We are 2-0. I mean, I pick the Vikings every single week. It's not going to change anything, but I truly believe we can beat this Rams team. Okay, I truly do. I think our defense will eat their offense for breakfast. Maybe Kyren Williams will have some success, but I think Matt Stafford's in for a interception fest, and I think Sam Darnold, JJ, are going to feast on the Rams defense. So Vikings over Rams shouldn't be any surprise. It should not be any surprise. Huge Vikings fan over here. With that, we get into NFL Sunday, and we head to our noon o'clock games. Head to our noon o'clock games. Ravens, -450 favorites, visit the +340 Browns. And I get it's a divisional game. Divisional teams usually split. That's usually the case. But, I mean, this Ravens team, 5-2, five-game win streak, 218 points put up. No other team in the AFC has put up over 200 points. Okay, the only other team to put up over 200, the Bucks and the Commanders. So Ravens are actually tied with the Commanders for best offense in the league. Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, unstoppable duo right there. Browns are 1-6, five-game losing streak, and are 0-3 at home. I don't think their fortunes change here. The Browns just look less hopeful as it goes on. If Jameis Winston starts, I give them a really good chance. But if they put in Dorian Thompson, I don't see it. We're going with the Ravens. I'm confident in this Ravens pick. It is going to take a very good team to beat the Ravens. And we look, the Buccaneers have done it. The Chiefs have done it. And they are two of the best teams in the league. So it takes a lot to beat the Ravens. I do not think the Browns have it. Give me Ravens over Browns. Plus, they're the favorite. Titans at +475. Take on the -750 Lions. I hope you guys know what odds means. That means to win $100, you would have to bet $750. So it's easily Lions. It's easily Lions. I don't even have to go in depth with how bad this Titans team is and with how good this Lions team is. This Lions team, 5-1. They've been immaculate. I don't even know what to do with this freaking team. I mean, they have a +62 point differential. They are 2-1 at home, which is still pretty good. They just find the way. Their offense is loaded. Their defense might start to dip off. Losing Aiden Hutchinson's gonna hurt. You know, and it was a divisional game against the Vikings. You know, they only won on a game-winning field goal. So it won't be, you know, these games won't be too easy in the future, but this is a pick-me-up week for them. Okay, Titans are 1-5, worst team in the AFC South, one of the worst teams in the league. Titans are 1-2 on the road, so their one win did come on the road, but, I mean, only 106 points for. This is not a good offense. Tony Pollard is the best thing about this offense. Just lost DeAndre Hopkins. It's Lions all day. Plus that -750, insane. Give it to me. After that, here's an interesting one. The Cardinals, +170, take on the -200 Dolphins. This one is a bit trickier, if you ask me. You know, Dolphins 2-4, worst offense in the league. 70 points put up. We're in week 8, guys. Okay, they aren't even averaging 10. They're averaging 10 points a game heading into week 8. That shouldn't even be possible, if you ask me. Cardinals, on the other hand, 3-4, so just a bit better than the Dolphins. They are coming off a win last week, which is very good. I just don't really know what to expect from them. I really don't. This Dolphins team, you know what? This is a game where Tyreek can feast, can really get it done. But the Dolphins, I just don't see as a complete team. I think they're still in turmoil. Even if Tua comes back, I think he's going to be having some issues. So I think we're actually going to pick the Cardinals for this one. Cardinals, little upset, +170, so it's not that big. And as much as I'm talking about like, oh, you know, like I haven't been doing too good on picks, you have to make risky picks. And I know this. And, you know, I'm pretty confident Vikings. I'm pretty confident Ravens. I'm pretty confident Lions. This one's 50-50 for me. And it's one of these games where you're kind of like, oh, Dolphins, they're just a better team. Tua's coming back. They're at home. And this is one where the Cardinals win. That's what I think is going to be taking place. Give me Cardinals over Dolphins, and I do think it'll be close. After that, Jets and Patriots. This one's weird for me, okay? Because it's like, there's just no way the Jets don't win, right? There's just no way. Jets minus 320, Patriots plus 260. And I mean, Patriots are on a six-game losing streak, 1-6, 99 points for them. They haven't even put up 100 points. Jets, their defense has been the only good thing. Four-game losing streak after starting 2-1. They're now 2-5, third in the AFC East. It has been abysmal. It has been abysmal. And Drake May, he's been chopping it up. But I just feel like you got to give this to the Jets. I feel like the Jets, we've, you know, benefit of the doubt for the Jets. Let's look at their losing streak here. Okay, Steelers, Bills, Vikings, Broncos. They've been taking on some killer defenses. You know, we mentioned top 10 defenses earlier. Four of these are in the top 10. Okay, Vikings, tied for second best team in the league. Bills, they're up there for best team in the league. Steelers, one of the best teams in the league. Broncos, I mean, their defense is killer. And there are weather conditions for that. Jets, last win, came over the Patriots. I think they get the sweep. I think they get it done. As we look at the standings, you know, Jets, they've gone 1-3 on the road. Okay, not too bad. As for the Patriots, they are 0-3. At home. So we're going to give this to the Jets. Am I confident? Not really. I'll be honest, I'm not that confident in the Jets, but look, I feel like Devontae Adams has finally adjusted. You'll get back to a divisional game and you'll get it done. As the noon games roll on, we have the Falcons and Bucks. This game, I can't believe you already get this rematch. You know, these two just put on one of the best games of the year. Not but, what was that, 2 weeks ago or something, in an incredible Thursday night matchup, and I'm buzzing for this. All right, this should be great. Falcons 4-3, Bucks 4-3. Winner's the head of the NFC South. Okay, winner's head of the NFC South. They got it minus 140 Falcons, plus 120 Bucks. Odds are even. This comes down to one thing, and one thing only. By the way, if no one knows, Falcons won that 36-30 in overtime. Crazy comeback by them. But this does come down to the fact that they're, you know, this isn't Tampa. But this comes down to the fact that the Falcons have a perfectly healthy team. Bucks do not. Bucks do not have a perfectly healthy team. Okay? Rashad White, Bucky Irving, Sean Trent, make up your mind about who's going to pop off. Okay? Mike Evans is hurt. Chris Godwin's hurt. Who's your wide receiver one? I don't know. Palmer? Auten? I legit don't even know. Falcons, meanwhile, their offense put up 163 points. They're 2-0 on the road. Bucks are 2-2 at home. Not being at home hasn't really helped them. I'm going with the Falcons all day. I'm actually going to be shocked if the Falcons don't take this. I'll be honest. If the Bucs win this, then it's Buccaneers defense. It's Baker's year. And if Baker can actually lead this team to a win here, like if he can perform well, he may bump Lamar for my MVP pick right now because he's putting up insane numbers on a team. He's putting up insane performances. And, you know, let's look at last week where they're getting blown out. They still tried to lead a game-winning drive. Okay, he got two touchdowns in the fourth. He's capable of it, but I got to give it to Kirko Chains, man. I really, really do. And what is this, two more? Three more. We have three more noon games. Packers, Jags. Packers are minus 200, Jags plus 170. I don't know, should I pick against the Packers this week? They are on a three-game win streak, 186 points put up. By the way, Jordan Love has missed, I think, two games this season or something. And he has the most touchdowns and most picks. He's putting up insane numbers. Packers have just been red hot. Red hot. The only teams that beat the Packers, Vikings and Eagles. They've only lost the best. Jags, 2-5. I mean, they just beat the Pats. I wouldn't really put that over them. I'm going to root more for Brian Thomas Jr., Tank Bigsby, than I am for anyone on the Packers. I'm not a Packers fan in the first place. Jags, 2-5. I mean, 2-1. 2-1. Both the wins have came at home for the Jags. One was in London, so I guess that doesn't really count as a home game. But, I mean, as we look at the Packers, you know, they've won twice on the road. Not too bad. I got to give this to the Packers. And also, it's one of those, if I pick the Packers and they lose, it's kind of a, you know, I win either way. I either predict the game correctly or the Packers lose. So, it's a win-win for me. Colts, Texans, another divisional game for you. Wrapping up a lot of divisional games as the midway point of the season approaches. Didn't these two teams just play? I swore they did. Anthony Richardson back in last week. I mean, it just shows how good Joe Flacco is leading a backup when the star goes out. And I mean, Colts, you know, they're on a two-game win streak now. Plus 6-point differential. Pretty good. But they take on the Texans. 5-2, lead the division. Last time these teams played was actually in the opener. Texans won 29-27. I actually remember that game. It was a barn burner. It was a competitive matchup. But I'll be interested to see how this Texans team does without Nico Collins facing this team. You know, they still got Stephon Diggs. They got Tank Dell. You know, Joe Mixon, too. Joe Mixon's been chopping it up since he returned from injury. Texans are 3-0 at home on the year. They are the -230 favorite. Colts at +195 are 1-2 on the road. I hate to keep giving so many... Here's my issue, guys, is with divisional games, is more often than not, teams split. And if I'm going to have the Texans win out, I'm going to have them win out over the Jags. I'm going to have them win out over the Titans. I honestly don't know if the Texans are going to win out over the Colts. Okay, I'm just kind of getting this feeling. Because, you know, I'm going to give the Texans wins over the Jaguars both times. Going to give them wins over the Titans both times. I don't think I'm going to give it to the Colts. So I'm actually going to say Colts here, even it up. Texans won by 3 in Indianapolis. Colts win by 3 in Houston. Crazy pick right here from me. Thinking it through. We'll have to see. I'm picking a lot of away teams to win as I look at this, but I don't really think that matters. Home and away, does it really matter? I don't really know. So we're going to go with the Colts. I think a lot of people are sleeping on them. This team is somewhat healthy. You know, Jonathan Taylor, he might be coming back this week, looking to be a killer again. I don't know. I truly don't know. But we will go Colts over Texans. It could be a crazy upset. It could just be, damn, Texans blow them out. We should have seen that coming. But we can't always pick the obvious, all right? That's how you get good predictions done. Final noon game for you. Eagles take on the Bengals. Ooh, I'm excited for this one. Eagles +125. Visit the -145 Bengals. Ooh, Bengals are the favorite at 3-4. Third in the NFC North. It's tough. It's tough. Ravens and Steelers are both doing pretty good. Bengals have worked their way out of their little 1-4 slump. They've gone on a little two-game win streak. They are 0-3 at home, though. Okay, they are 0-3 at home, which is not good. Not good in the slightest. And I think that will hinder them. I do think that will hinder them. I also think their defense is not that good. You know, you can point to the fact that Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, they're all killers. They're the only three killers on the team. The only three that scream to me, I want to win. I want to be here. Whereas for the Eagles, I truly get the vibe that, you know, Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, they know they have a good team. They know they have a good team, right? And their defense has only allowed 115 points so far this year. They have, I think it is the third best defense in the NFC. Okay, this team's been pretty good. 2-1 at home, 2-1 on the road. Wherever the Eagles are, they seem to pull it together. Plus, when I look at it, I mean, the fact the Eagles are even the underdog here is kind of outstanding to me. I've been picking a lot of road teams, though, to win. I think if I do pick, I mean, gosh, I'm actually picking, like, every single road team to win, in except for the Colts, except for the Lions. The Lions are the only home team I've predicted to win. That's absolutely insane. There's just no way that comes true, right? Right? There's no way that comes true. I don't know. I'm leaning Eagles. I root for more Eagles players than I root for Bengals. So we'll give this one to the Eagles. I don't know how confident I am with that, honestly, even as I make that. Gosh darn it. Why have I... All right, look, here's my recap of my noon predictions. Vikings over Rams, Packers over Jaguars, Cardinals over Dolphins, Jets over Patriots, Ravens over Browns, Eagles over Bengals, Colts over Texans, Lions over Titans, Falcons over Bucks. I'm only predicting the Lions to win at home. That is wow. That is insane if you ask me. Okay, let's get into these 3:30 games. I kind of want to get out of this. This is ridiculous. Okay, Saints visit the Chargers. There you go. All right, there you go. I'm picking the Chargers. All right, let me just tell you, I'm picking the Chargers. All righty, I mean, Chargers, their defense looking in. Okay, performance last week, not the best. Not the best, but J.K. Dobbins, he'll run over the Saints team. I think the Saints team is kind of in turmoil, if I'm being honest. Saints, 2-5. Saints have gone 1-3 at home, 1-2 on the road. How have the Chargers done? I don't know too much about the Chargers. 3-3 on the year. They're 1-1 at home. Yeah, I'm just going to go with the Chargers because I definitely need to pick home teams. It got way out of control. Bills visit the Seahawks. Ooh, this should be a great game right here. Bills 5-2, two-game win streak. 2-2 on the road. So both their losses have came on the road. 199 points put up. This is a great team, upgraded with Amari Cooper. James Cook, when he's healthy, he's a killer. And Seahawks, you know, they're technically atop the NFC West. 4-3, coming off win, 108 points put up as well. I don't know. You know, this Buffalo team is weird. This is a weird Buffalo team, okay? You never know what you're going to get, okay? And I look at this. You know, they blow out the Titans after going down 10-0, expected. The Jets, they only win by 3. Texans lose by 3, get blown out by the Ravens, blow out the Jaguars, blow out the Dolphins, barely beat the Cardinals. I think that the NFC West is going to give them a run for their money this year. We've already seen it with the Cardinals. I think the 49ers and Rams are going to be the same case. That's what we're going to go with. That's what we're going to go with here. I think the Seahawks beat the Bills. I also think it's tough. It's tough to play in Seattle. Don't be fooled by them being 2-2. Okay, those two losses the Seahawks have suffered at home have come to the 49ers, a perfectly healthy 49ers team, and a shocking upset by the Giants. Okay, a shocking upset by the Giants. So I think they get back on track. I think the Bills get shocked a bit. Give me the Seahawks over the Bills. Got to spice it up here, guys. And the more I keep saying spice it up, the more I realize I'm probably going to get every prediction I've made incorrectly wrong. Definitely sad. Seahawks are the plus 140. Bills minus 165. So we're going with the underdog. Bears visit the Commanders. This is, you know, if you told me last year Bears were playing the Commanders, I'd have been like, this is a completely awful matchup here. But no, well, I actually think this is going to be a pretty good matchup, in my opinion. Bears, they are somehow last in the NFC North with a 4-2 record, 3-game win streak. That's just because we're loaded. We're absolutely loaded here in the NFC North. Bears, 148 points put up, only 101 points allowed. Wow. Thanks to the bye, this might be the best defense in the league. Actually, Chargers defenses, they've only allowed 83 points. Wow. Bears, second-best defense in the league, best in the NFC. And Commanders, they're not going to have Jaden Daniels, okay? They might be having Marcus Mariota. So we'll have to see. Commanders, though, way better than last year. Pretty good start, 5-2, one of the best teams in the league. Commanders are also 3-0 at home. Bears coming off a bye. I'm actually going to give this one to the Commanders. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to give this one to the Commanders. I just think Commanders have been playing better ball at home. I think that, you know, the Bears offense is good, but I just think this Commanders team is better this year. We'll give it to the Commanders all day, all night. Am I predicting them just because they are the home team? Maybe. We'll have to see. Oh my gosh. Panthers visit the Broncos. Broncos are a minus 650 favorite. Panthers at plus 425. Yeah, we're picking the Broncos. How about the worst offense in football taking on the best defense? That's what this matchup is right here for you. Panthers, 1-6. They have already given up 243 points this year. They have a minus 133 point differential. Panthers, only win came on the road. Who did the Panthers even beat? I can't even remember. They beat the Raiders. Wow, the Raiders absolutely suck. Goodness me. Goodness me. As for the Broncos, 4-3 coming off a win. Bo Nix, he's been balling, man, putting it all together. Javonte Williams had a good game. This defense is killer. Yeah. We're going with the Broncos all day. After that, Chiefs visit the Raiders. It's Chiefs. It's Chiefs. I'm going to just say Chiefs are going to go 7-0. I don't, you know, I know I talk about divisional matchups, how they're going to be closer. It's just Raiders are 2-5, 3-game losing streak. They just gave away Davante Adams. They have nothing in the running back room. They have no one at quarterback. They are in complete disarray. And the Chiefs just upgraded DeAndre Hopkins. They don't have their best wide receiver, Rashee Rice. They don't have their best running back, Isaiah Pacheco. They still keep winning. It is insane to me. Only 103 points given up. You know, 146 points for. They're not scoring as much as they have in the past seasons, but they're giving up not as many points. And it is working. All right. Chiefs, much as people hate them, they're going to keep winning. And it continues here. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into Sunday Night Football. Cowboys 49ers. There we go. That's how you do Sunday Night Football, not Steelers, Jets, whatever the heck that was. No, you do Cowboys, you do 49ers. I love it. Cowboys team finally gets a break, all right? They're coming off a loss. They are 0-3 at home. They are 3-0 on the road. Fun fact for you, 3-0 on the road, okay? 49ers, 2-2 at home, 1-2 on the road. They are third in the NFC West. Okay, these are two teams that a lot were expected of them. These are two teams that were probably expected to win their divisions, who We're now sitting at third, heading into week eight. This is where you rebound. This is where we see which one of these teams wants it much more. I'm a little torn because, you know, on one hand, I want to root for Jordan Mason. On one hand, I want to root for CeeDee Lamb. So I think the Cowboys take this one. You know, I think their defense was able to look at the issues that happened in that Lions loss. They were able to get a bye. They were able to review things. I think they can beat them through the air. I saw the 49ers get bested through the air by the Chiefs. If the Chiefs can walk you down, the Cowboys just need to replicate that. And I think they can pull off a little stunner here. Cowboys over the 49ers. Give it to me. Plus, you know, they ain't got no Devo. You got no Ayuk no more. No McCaffrey. This team is getting injured left, right, and center. With that, final game of week 8 for your week 8 quick picks. Giants plus 225 visit the -275. Wow, Pittsburgh Steelers. 97% of votes on ESPN are for the Steelers to win. And I hate to say I go with the masses, but I mean Giants, they are 2-5. 2-5. Now, let me be honest, both the Giants wins have came on the road, funny enough, in Seattle and in Cleveland, but they just got no star power. They truly have no star power. Malik Nabers keeps getting hurt. I don't even know who their running back one is. I mean, it is atrocious. And the Steelers, man, that defense is killer. Number one kicker. Russell Wilson and Justin Fields is one of the best quarterback duos I've ever seen. They literally have two starting quarterbacks playing for their team. They're also on a two-game win streak. They are 2-1 at home. Yeah, it's Steelers Nation all day. I mean, you want to see a huge upset. Giants over Steelers would be the biggest upset of the week, but I just don't see it. Steelers over Giants. Most Monday night games have been generally pretty close. Steelers have been on a nice little run. I say they win 22-10. So 30 points totally for the matchup. Gotta lock my picks in. You know, I've been realizing that whenever I make my picks, they don't line up with the picks I make on the podcast. And then I'm like, oh, I did so well on the podcast, but then my picks don't even translate. So we picked a lot of away teams to win this week. In fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... We got six home teams winning and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 6-10 split. 6-10 split when it comes to home teams and away teams. But I'm excited to see this. Should be a good week of football. Lots of excitement. Lots of big things coming at you. I don't really know. As long as the Vikings win, I am happy. Truly, as long as the Minnesota Vikings win, I am a happy, happy boy. At the end of the day, that's all that matters, right? That I'm happy? No. What matters is life is good, if you will. And you know what else is really good is when we get new updates in the pop culture world. Let me tell you, that makes me really happy. And this is another installment of the top 10 new things going on in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film. And here's a fun fact for you. Live here on the podcast, we record all these episodes live. None of it's really edited. It's currently pouring rain right now, and I was going to go out and order a pizza. So now I'm kind of sad. I don't know if I want to go driving in the pouring rain. We'll have to make a tough decision. So, number one, Disney will reportedly announce a huge AI initiative that will transform its creative output with focus on post-production and visual effects. AI will also be integrated into Disney's parks and experiences businesses in some way. Yikes. That's all I got to say. How about that? Disney is going on the full AI train. They're embracing it. They're giving into it. And they're all corporate greedy. I don't really like Disney in the first place. It does not surprise me they're incorporating a bunch of AI. Very weird, though. AI is trippy. I like to use it sometimes, but it's weird to me. I think TikTok uses AI to use their algorithm. I truly believe they do. Number two, a new survey found 63.5% of respondents of ages 10 to 24 prefer film/TV stories to focus on friendships rather than relationships. 62.4% say sexual content isn't needed as a plot device. Those of age 10 to 13 weren't asked questions about sexual content, though. Well, that's good. You aren't asking children. But what's going on, 14 to 24? We don't want any more sex. We don't want any more sexual relationships on our TV screen, huh? What happened to the good old days? You know, women in bikinis, all the goods in the 80s and 90s. No, we're all getting all soft. No, I'll tell you what. You need more attractive women on screen. That's how you get male libido up, given it's too many gay relationships. Let me tell you, that's the issue. Number three. What should we do? Helen Mirren says that she always says it's so sad that Kurt Cobain died when he did because he never saw GPS, as it's the most wonderful thing to watch my little blue spot walking down the street. I just find it completely magical and unbelievable. Is Helen Mirren a vampire? I think she might be. I think we might have some vampires in Hollywood. There is no way she just said she's sad Kurt Cobain died because he couldn't see GPS. Oh, man. Sometimes I wish I never looked at the internet. That is incredibly, incredibly dumb. Number four, UFC light heavyweight champion Alex Pereira is in talks to make his acting debut alongside Adria Ajorna in Adam Wingard's action horror thriller Onslaught for A24. Oh, gosh. If Alex Pereira was a freaking serial killer or something, get out of here. You're actually dead. Alex Pereira is an absolute murderer, an absolute killer, and oh my gosh, if he gets a hold of you, you're actually done for. I would so watch that. Number five, there are no plans for new Kingsman movies anytime soon. Are you freaking kidding me? Why would we stop making Kingsman movies? Kingsman movies are awesome, all right? Taron Egerton, love him. Little Samuel Jackson, he's been in them. Oh, man, that's sad. Even Channing Tatum was good in them. I love the Kingsman movies, and I only have three of them. Number six, a new Alien vs. Predator movie will probably happen. Okay, are they terrible? Yes. Will I watch it? Maybe. I don't really get the appeal, but hey, it's something. On the same topic, at number seven, two Predator movies are releasing next year, both directed by Dan Trachtenberg. Badlands, starring Ellie Fanning, in theaters on November 7th and set. This is what it says, guys. Badlands, starring Ellie Fanning, in theaters on November 7th. Oh, it is set in the Badlands. I get what it's saying. It stars Ellie Fanning. I get what it's saying. I was thinking of Badlands, like, for some reason. It's set in the Badlands, and it will come out in November 7th. It's in the future. A Secret Predator movie will also release in some form before Badlands. The movie is called Predator Badlands. I'm such an idiot. They phrase this weird. Hollywood Reporter, they phrase this weird. They're making me sound super dumb. Number eight, an Alien Romulus sequel is in the works. Kaylee Spani and David Johnson will likely reprise their roles. And I'm just assuming Kaylee Spani and David Johnson are the only ones who survived the first movie. I actually kind of want to watch Alien Romulus whenever it comes out. I think it's coming to HBO Max, actually. I will give it a check out, even though it's probably scary and creepy. I don't really like that, though. What else should we look at? We got two more. Let's try and find some interesting stuff. Number nine, Warner Bros. Has acquired the rights to release Emerald Fennell's Wuthering Heights, starring Jake Bellorti and Margot Robbie. Netflix made a $150 million bid for the film, but the producers went with a lower offer from Warner Brothers to ensure a global theatrical release. Wuthering Heights. What a weird name for a movie. It does star Jake Bellorti, breaking out star, and Margot Robbie, who's been at the top for a while. And number 10, a Mexican remake of The Office is in the works. I can't believe that's true. We need to stop remaking shows. How about we make new freaking shows? Well, those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. Very weird, very odd. Let's put that behind us. Let's focus on the main thing I want to talk about today, which is UFC 308. It's taken us an hour to get here, ladies and gentlemen. We are here. We are ready. This is your official UFC 308 predictions and preview show. Let's get right on into it. Kicking off the card, we head to the men's welterweight division as Renat Gladiator Fakhretdinov takes on Carlos the Lion Zeal. Renat Fakhretdinov is 22-1-1. Carlos Leal, 21-5. 6'5", 5'11", gives Renat 1 inch in height. They both have the same reach of 74 inches and an orthodox style for fighting. Pretty similar. These two are eerily similar. Carlos Leal stepping in on short notice. Renat Fakhretdinov was supposed to fight Nurul Sutunruzaboyev, which would have been an absolutely amazing fight. I'm just happy he gets to stay on the card. Renat Fakhretdinov, 33 years old, from Moscow, Russia. Of his 21 wins, he has 11 knockouts and 7 subs. He's currently on a 19-fight unbeaten streak. Crazy enough. 19-fight unbeaten streak. Currently 4-0 with one draw in the UFC, including a finish of Kevin Lee back in 2023. He fought earlier this year in June and went to a split decision with Nicholas Dalby. I thought he won that, but I guess it was a split decision. Also holds a win over Brian Battle. Impressive enough. Renat Fakhretdinov is an absolute killer. He is a grappler through and through. No in between. Of his 5 UFC fights so far, he has 8. Takedowns. The only fight where he didn't land a takedown was the Kevin Lee fight because he knocked him down and submitted him in 55 seconds. So Renat Fakhretdinov just on the edge of the rankings. I'm actually surprised he's not fighting someone ranked in the rankings such as Neil Magny, Vicente Luque, Jeff Neal. But you know what? Another stepping stone here as he takes on the debuting Carlos Leal. Carlos Leal, 30 years old from Brazil, currently on a 2-fight winning streak of his 21 wins, 10 KOs, and 2 subs of his 5 losses. He's only ever been submitted once. He's actually fought in the PFL. He was a champion in LFA. Carlos Leal, been around to a number of promotions, but finally winds up here in the UFC. Tough ask, though, to fight Renat Fakhretdinov in your debut. I do not think Carlos Leal is going to get it done. I think Renat Fakhretdinov could beat a number of ranked welterweights right now. I'm going to give this one to Renat Fakhretdinov. I think the competition level here in the UFC is a bit higher. I'm actually going to say he finishes him or knocks him out within the first two rounds, being bold enough as I am to make that claim. I just think Renat Fakhretdinov's abilities surpass those of Carlos Leal. But Carlos, you know, welcome to the UFC. I wish you luck. After that, we go to the men's middleweight division as Ismael Narudiev takes on Bruno Blindado Silva. Ismael, 23-7. Bruno, 23-11. 6'5'10" gives Bruno 2 inches in height. They both have an orthodox stance and a 74-inch reach. Crazy that we have four fighters starting off the card all have a 74-inch reach, despite being in different weight classes for two of them. Let's start with Bruno Silva here. Bruno Silva, been in the UFC before. He is the plus 105 underdog, 35 years old from Brazil. Of his 23 wins, 20 knockouts. Now, of his 11 losses, 7 by sub. So he's not going to lose on the feet. He's going to lose on the ground. Trains at Evolucio Thai MMA in Brazil. Bruno, been with the UFC since 2021. Started out really good, 3-0, 3 knockouts, then ran into Alex Pereira. Did go the distance with Alex Pereira. Pretty crazy enough. Of Alex Pereira's 9 wins in MMA, he's only ever lost twice. 1 to Jan Blachowicz and 1 to... Actually, has he lost 3 times? I think actually has Pereira lost 3 times. No, he's lost twice. Oh, he beat... No, he's only gone the distance of his 11 times. And one of them was against Bruno Silva. That's what I was trying to say. He's also has lost to Gerald Meerschaert after that, which was tough. Knocked out Brad Tavares last April of 2023, that is. That was his last win. Since then, lost to Brendan Allen, lost to Sharon Magomedov, most recently lost in March to Chris Weidman. So he is currently 1-5 in his last 6. This is make or break for Bruno Silva. And we'll see how he does as he takes on Ismael Narudiev. Ismael, 28 years old, born in Russia, now lives and trains in Morocco. Of his 23 wins, he has 12 knockouts and 6 submissions. Of his 7 losses, he's been finished 4 times. Currently coming off a win, Ismael steps into this one. Having fought in the UFC before, he had 4 matchups between February of 2019 and February 2020, so in a year. He went 2-2. Most notable person he fought was Sean Brady, who he lost to, which is kind of why he was cut. Just was very boring, didn't do anything. I don't know if I really want to pick Ismael Narudiev here. I mean, this is kind of his territory of the world. I don't know anything about him. And Bruno Silva, nice little easy, what do you want to call it, underdog to pick right off the bat. We're going to go Bruno Silva for this one. I think he gets it done by knockout. I mean, I just don't know a lick about Ismael Narudiev. And as impressive as it is, out of all your wins, 18 finishes, pretty good. I think Bruno Silva is going to lock in. He's not fighting someone of Alex Pereira, Gerald Meerschaert, Chris Weidman, Sharon Magomedov, Brendan Allen, all right? When he fights these unranked guys, this is where he thrives. That's what's going to happen in this one. After that, bantamweight action as Farhad Ferocious Bashrat takes on Victor Stryker Hugo. Farid, 12-0, our first undefeated fighter of the evening. Victor Hugo, 25-4. 5'8 to 5'7 gives Farid 1 inch in height. 71-inch reach for both these men. Orthodox stance. Weird first 3 fights, same stance and reach for both of our fighters. I like that. Let's start with Farid, the minus 500 favorite, 27 years old from Afghanistan, now lives in Las Vegas, trains at Extreme Couture, same gym as Sean Strickland, Chris Curtis. Of his 12 wins, 1 KO and 6 submissions. He was actually supposed to fight Montel Jackson on June 22nd, but that fight fell apart. But unfortunately for him, he was able to get a fight in before the end of the year. He did fight in January where he beat Taylor Lapalooz. So far, 3-0 in the UFC. He has 1 finish by submission. He's a grappler, man. He's a grappler through and through. 3 fights in the UFC, 10 takedowns. Does what he needs to, throws up in a submission here and there. Minus 500 favorite, insane. His opponent, Victor Hugo. I'm actually surprised he's a plus 380 underdog. The 31-year-old from Brazil is on a 14-fight win streak. Of his 25 wins, 8 KOs, 9 submissions. Now, of his 4 losses, he has been finished 3 times. Fought once this year, making his UFC debut, won a unanimous decision over Pedro Falco. I mean, it's just, when I see minus 500, plus 380, I don't like odds to influence me, but I truly believe that they gotta, okay? And I mean, Victor was taken down once by Pedro Falco in that fight. He did face 13 takedown attempts. So I think Victor gonna face some takedown attempts from Fareed Bashrat, gonna get taken down. Fareed gonna move to 13-0. Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. Some part of me wants to pick Victor, 14 fight win streak, getting finishes here and there. But when you can't finish a guy like Pedro Falco, who I know nothing about, and then you take on a guy in Fareed who's game, who's been learning from UFC competition, I just think Fareed takes this one, grapples his way to a victory. Keeping us moving, we go to the men's heavyweight division as Kennedy African Savage Nchukwa takes on Chris Beast Boy Barnett. And you're about to get your biggest favorite of the card and biggest underdog right here. Kennedy, 12-5, Chris, 23-8, 6'5-5'9, gives Kennedy 8 inches in height. He also has an 83-75, 8-inch reach advantage. Southpaw for Kennedy, orthodox for Chris Barnett. Talking about how even our first few matchups are, and then we get to this one, and the discrepancy is absolutely insane. Kennedy, minus 550, Chris, plus 400. Kennedy, 32 years old, from Nigeria, now lives in Texas, trains at Fortis MMA, same gym, actually, as, oh my goodness, I'm mind blanking, someone else on this card trains at Fortis MMA. I hope I write down, I kind of want to find it right now, in my notes. Someone else on this card trains at Fortis MMA. I think we might bring that up later. But, I mean, of his 12 wins, 8 KOs, 1 submission. Of his 5 losses, he's been finished 3 times. He was actually supposed to fight Marcos Rogério de Lima, who I believe is ranked in the men's heavy division at number 14. That fight fell apart. In would step Justin Taffa. Justin Taffa would get injured, and in to take both their places is Chris Barnett. But Kennedy, been with the UFC since 2017, won on the first season of Dana White's Contender Series, fighting at light heavyweight throughout his entire UFC career so far. He's lost to Paul Craig. He's knocked out Carlos Ulberg, knocked out Daniel Marquez, been knocked out by Dawun Chong. He once was on a 3-fight win streak, then got knocked out by Dustin Jacoby. Most recently, in March, lost a split decision to Ovince St. Preux. He has just had an unpredictable run so far in the UFC, has decided to move up to heavyweight. We'll see how it pays off as he takes on the Beast Boy, Chris Barnett. Chris Barnett, Plus 400 underdog, 38 years old, born in Spain, actually, been in Florida for a long time now. Of his 23 wins, 18 KOs. Of his 8 losses, he's been finished 4 times, 2 by KO, 2 by submission. He's actually has had 4 canceled bouts since his last matchup in September of 2022, has been unable to get a fight the last 2 years, finally lands one here. 2-2 so far in the UFC, he's been submitted by Ben Rothwell, knocked out Gian Villante, lost the decision to Martin Boudet, most recently knocked out Jake Collier with a crazy spinning back kick. That was awesome, UFC 279. I'm excited to see what, actually, no, that was against Gian Villante, now that I'm thinking about it. But Chris Barnett, 2 fights in the UFC, 2 knockouts. I do think he goes win-loss, win-loss. So I'm going to give this one to Kennedy. I'm going to say decision, but anything can happen here. Anything can happen here. I'll be rooting for Chris Barnett, but we're going to go with Kennedy and Chukani. I mean, minus 550, it's hard to pick against that. Let's stick with some of these higher-ranked weight classes, if you will. Middleweight division as Abusmagomedov takes on Bruno the Hulk Ferreira. Abusmagomedov, 26-6-1. Bruno, 12-1. 6'2-5'10 does give Abus 4 inches in height, and he has 6 inches in reach, 78-72. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Abus, minus 150. Bruno, plus 125. So we're back to some more even odds here. Abusmagomedov, 34 years old, born in Russia, now lives and trains in Germany. Of those 26 wins, he has 14 KOs and 6 submissions. Now, out of his 6 losses, he has been finished 4 times. Won his UFC debut against Dustin Stolfus in 2022, knocking him out in 19 seconds. He was then propelled to a main event against Sean Strickland last year, where he won the first round. You know, he almost actually finished Sean Strickland at one point, was getting the better striking exchanges, and his gas tank failed him, got knocked out in the second round. After that, had to take on Kyle Barallo, similar situation, gas tank failed him. Most recently, in May, came back, took on Walray Alves, shot 6 takedowns, got 12 minutes of control time, just wanted to get a win. But I hope he stands and he strikes with Bruno Ferreira. But he has to be careful, though. because Bruno Ferreira is an absolute killer. The plus 125 underdog, 31 years old from Brazil, 12 wins, 9 KOs, and 3 submissions, 100% finish rate. And by the way, he's never been the distance in his career. He's crazy. Okay, they call him the Hulk for a reason. He is so game. He was actually supposed to fight Roman Kopilov in August, but that fight fell apart. Bruno, 3-1 in the UFC. All of his fights have ended in round one via knockout. He was knocked out once by Nelson Ruzaboyev. Other than that, round one knockout Gregor Rodriguez, round one knockout Phil Haas, round one spinning back elbow knockout of Dustin Stolfus. That was crazy. 2-0 so far in 2024. He's been looking amazing. I honestly don't think it stops here. I think there is something in Bruno Ferreira's hands. And by the way, he was taken down in his last fight, so we know he can get taken down and get back up, especially against Dustin Stolfus, who is really good at takedowns. So we're going with Bruno Ferreira. We're going with the underdog. He's going to be throwing some hands. Abu's going to have those fists up, locked in. But I do think we get a round one knockout here from Bruno Ferreira. And I'm excited for that. Okay, so I'm very excited for that. After that, lightweight division, as we get into our third to last prelim, another great matchup. Just these prelims are so loaded. Lightweight division, Matheus Rebeke takes on Mykytabek Oralbay. I think I've finally nailed Mykytabek's name. Matheus +210, Oralbay -275. Matheus 19-2, Mykytabek 13-1-1. 5'10 to 5'7 does give Mykytabek 3 inches in height. He also has 8 inches in reach, 74-66. Orthodox stands for Oralbay, southpaw for Rebeke. Great matchup here between unranked lightweights. This is truly a test of, hey, can you go to the UFC rankings, or are you going to be fighting unranked competition for the foreseeable future? Let's start with Matheus Rebeke, the underdog here. 32 years old from Poland. Of his 19 wins, 9 KOs and 7 subs. Both of his 2 career losses have been by knockout. He was actually on a 16-fight win streak, and he was up 2 rounds when he lost to Diego Ferreira in May. It was tragic. It was unfortunate. It was a crazy upset. Before that, he had round 1 finishes, round 2 knockouts, round 1 subs. I mean, he was 3-0 in the UFC, doing pretty good. Lost to Diego Ferreira. I would not hold that against him. Diego Ferreira is super talented. Such a great fighter. I mean, Diego Ferreira holds wins over Anthony Pettis, Rustam Khabilov, Oliver Aubin-Mercier. I mean, this guy is super game. Matheus back in action. I wish him luck, man. Truly, I wish you luck. Representing Poland, if we do go to Poland at some point, he will definitely be on that card. But this is no easy challenge. As he takes on the man from the mountains, the 13-1, Mykytabek Oralbay, 26 years old, from Kyrgyzstan, on an 8-fight winning streak. Of his 13 wins, 6 KOs, and 5 submissions. Dude, he's so cool. He's so cool. His one loss was a decision in 2020. I mean, come on. Debuted in November last year, submitting Yaros Medic in round number 2. After that, beat Elvis Brenner this year in May in a crazy fight. Dominated him. There's no way we're picking against Mykytabek Oralbay. Dude, he's so cool. He wears his goofy little hat. He just looks like he has seen many wars in his life, and he's only 26 years old. He's only 4 years older than me, this guy. And he just looks like he is an aged soldier of some kind. Super entertaining. I think he might actually get another submission here. I'm going to go round 2 submission for Mykytabek Oralbay. I mean, I'm here for it. I'm honestly here for it. And I rock with this. I rock with picking finishes over anything else. And I just think Oralbay's grappling is superior. Actually, you know, it's tough. These two are very similar. The matchmaking here is absolutely beautiful. But I'm going to give this to Mykytabek Oralbay. I could see a decision here. I can honestly see a decision, but I think it's more fun picking on the submissions, you know. And hey, Matheus Rebeke, got to be careful when you're fighting Mykytabek Oralbay. With that, we finally get into some ranked competition as we head to the men's welterweight division. As the number 10 ranked Jeff Neal takes on the number 15th ranked lightweight Rafael dos Anjos. This fight makes no sense. Why is Rafael dos Anjos ranked in the men's lightweight division? Like that doesn't even make sense. It does not make sense how Rafael dos Anjos is ranked in the men's lightweight division. I'll hold my case for 1 second. Jeff Neal, 15-6. Rafael dos Anjos, 32-16. 5'11 to 5'8 does give Jeff 3 inches in height, and he is 5 inches in reach, 75-70, southpaw stance with that left hand for both of these gentlemen. Let's start with the -310 favorite, Jeff Neal. 34 years old from Texas. He trains at Fortis MMA. Okay, so who else did I say trained at Fortis MMA? Great, now I can't remember. Now I can't remember who else trained at Fortis MMA. Oh my gosh, we are not continuing till I find who actually, who is it? Oh, Kenny and Chukane. So Kenny and Chukane and Jeff Neal are training partners. Jeff Neal, 9 KOs and 2 subs of his 15 wins. Of his 6 losses, he's been finished 3 times. Jeff Neal, been with the UFC since 2018. Hey, he's been good, man. It takes a lot to beat this guy. He's gotten some knockouts of Nico Price, Frank Camacho, Mike Perry, Vicente Luque, which was actually his last win, August 2022. But then, you know, he's had main event losses to Wonderboy Thompson. He's lost close decisions to Neil Magny. He's been finished by Shafkar Akhmanov. Most recently in February, fought Ian Gary. Just got outstruck in that one. So, Jeff Neal, 2-fight losing streak, looking to rebound. Takes on Rafael Dos Anjos. Rafael Dos Anjos is the plus 250 underdog. All right, ranked number 15 in the men's lightweight division. Okay, the last time Rafael Dos Anjos beat a lightweight was in 2022. Okay, wow. All right, last time he beat a lightweight. Other than that, he has fought in 2 welterweights in that time. So he had a main event against a welterweight last year. Crazy if you ask me. Crazy. Rafael Dos Anjos from Brazil, 39 years old, your former men's lightweight champion a decade ago in 2014. Of his 48 professional victories, he's gone to a decision 28 times. He has 5 KOs and 11 subs. He's been finished 4 times by submission. Never been, he's been finished 4 times, I think, total, actually. But, I mean, come on. Come on. 28 of 48 professional fights gone. The distance. Oh, my gosh. He's a decision machine. Most recently fought in March. Got out grappled by Matheus Gamrot. Before that, lost a main event to Vicente Luque. So, last time he won, December 2022, submitting Brian Barberina. He's also been knocked out by Rafael Fiziev in July of 2022. I mean, Dos Anjos been around 2008. Just some guys that he's fought in. Jeremy Stevens, Clay Guida, Gleison Tibau, Cowboy Cerrone, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Benson Anderson, Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, Eddie Alvarez, Tony Ferguson, Robbie Lawler, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman, Leon Edwards. This guy has fought in the best of the best. But it won't help you here. Jeff Neal, come with those hands of steel. That's his nickname, Jeff Neal by knockout. I think RDA has not fought in an actual welterweight. I mean, look at the guys that he's beaten before him. Brian Barberina. Does he count as anyone? Does he really count as someone? I don't think Brian Barberina counts. But Jeff Neal, I think if you get back in the win column, I mean, hey, he went toe-to-toe with Ian Gary and was never really in danger of getting knocked out. He can hang with some of the better strikers. So, Jeff Neal, by knockout, locking him. After that, we head to our final prelim of the night. The bout order has just been absolutely swapping around like crazy. I do think it is locked in, though. And for some reason, the final prelim of the evening is a light heavyweight matchup between Ibo the Last Ottoman Aslan and Rafael the Lion Cerquera. I am taken aback by why this is the final prelim, but okay, Ibo, minus 125, Rafael, plus 105. Aslan, 13-1, Cerquera, 11-0. 6'3 for both these gentlemen, 77 inches, 76, 1 inch for Ibo, orthodox for Ibo Aslan, southpaw for Rafael Cerquera. Ibo Aslan, man, he is 28 years old from Turkey, currently on a 5-fight winning streak. Of his 13 wins, he has 13 knockouts. His one loss was by submission. He's currently 1-0 in the UFC, won his Daniel Contreras series debut in August of 2023, and debuted in March with a round 3 fight of the night knockout of Anton Turkaljic, who he had actually beaten 2 times before. So, funny enough. Ibo Aslan, he is a power puncher as they come. He is game. He is from Turkey. He's the last Ottoman. And he takes on the debuting Rafael Cerquera. Rafael, the underdog here, 34 years old from Brazil. Of his 11 wins, 8 KOs and 2 subs. His last win was in April, where he got a round 1 knockout. So, this should be fun. This should be exciting. I don't know a lick about Rafael Cerquera, but I have seen a bit from Ibo Aslan. So I'm going to go Ibo Aslan by knockout. Going to stick with it, man. He's gotten all his wins by knockout so far. No need to stop right now. And Turkey, this is somewhat of a home matchup for him. You know, that whole region kind of just falls into Abu Dhabi, if you ask me. So Ibo Aslan, that's who we'll ride with. We'll go by knockout. Prelims, man, they are absolutely loaded. My picks, Bruno Silva, Hernat Fakhradinov, Farid Bashrat, Kenny and Chukani, Bruno Fajera, My Typical Girl by Jeff Neal, Ebba Wazlan, and I predicted a lot of knockouts. I gotta be careful. With that, though, we do get into our main card, and this is one of the best main cards I've seen all year. We kick things off. Middleweight division, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Sharamagomedov, the Bullet, takes on Armin Superman Petrosian. Sharamagomedov, 14 wins, 0 losses. Armin Petrosian, 9-3. 6'3 and a 6'2 gives Armin 1 inch in height, but 2 inches in reach. Go to Shara, 73-71. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters. I love me a little Sharamagomedov, baby. But -185 for Shara, +155 for Armin Petrosian. Sharamagomedov, the Russian from Dagestan, is 30 years old, and of his 14 wins, has 11 KOs. Currently 2-0 this year, 3-0 so far in the UFC, wins over Bruno Silva, round 3 TKO over Antonio Tricoli in June, and fought in August and beat Michael Olakajasek in a fight of the night. His weakness is grappling, okay? His weakness is grappling. On the feet, Shara will outbox you all day. He can also eat shots, as we saw in that fight against Michael Olakajasek. He can eat some big shots. Same in the Bruno Silva fight. He has a very interesting style. You never know what you get with Shara, but I'll tell you what, yeah, I know you're going to get a victory. Okay, Sharamagomedov is incredible. His opponent, Armin Petrosian, a fellow striker. A fellow striker is Armin Petrosian. Of his, 33 years old, from Russia, now lives and trains in Armenia. 5 KOs of his 9 victories. He was a kickboxer, I believe. Of his 3 losses, he's been finished twice. He is currently 3-2 in the UFC. Wins over Gregory Rodriguez, lost to Kyle Barallo, went over AJ Dobson, went over Christian Larry Duncan. Most recently, in February, lost to Rodolfo Vieira by arm triangle in round number 1. On the feet, I'm still siding with Sharamagomedov. This should be a kickboxing masterclass, and I think Shara gets a round 2 knockout. I think Shara has gotten better and better every time he steps in the octagon. This is a UFC boy. Okay, this is a guy the UFC are super high on. If this goes to a decision, expect Sharamagomedov. The only way I see Shara losing is if it's just incredibly one-sided, the judges can't even skew it, or he somehow gets TKO'd. But this fight should be fought on the feet. I'm giving it to the -185 favorite, Sharamagomedov. After that, featherweight action, as the number 12-ranked Lerone Murphy takes on the number 14th-ranked Dan Ige. Excited to see both of these guys back in action. Been a minute since we last saw them. I mean, not really, honestly. They fought both this year. But Lerone the Miracle Murphy takes on Dan 50K Ige. Lerone is undefeated, 14-0 with 1 draw. Dan Ige, 18-8. 5'9-5'7 gives Lerone 2 inches in height, and he is 2 inches in reach, 73-71. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Good for them. Good for them. Lerone Murphy, the -200 favorite. Dan Ige, +165. Lerone, the Englishman. Lerone, the Englishman, if you will. 33 years old, England. 7 KOs of his 14 wins. He was actually supposed to fight Dan Ige in February, but that fight fell apart. Instead, Lerone Murphy would end up fighting Edson Barboza in a main event in May, and he would win that in a fight of the night. You know, Lerone, he's been pretty good. You know, he is on a 6-fight winning streak in the UFC, 6-0 in the UFC, undefeated overall, but he's only had 2 finishes. You know, he finished Ricardo Ramos in his second UFC fight, knocked out Makwan Amerikani in 2021. But, I mean, other than that, you know, decision wins over Gabriel Santos, Josh Culiabo, Douglas Silva de Andrade. The Edson Barboza fight was good, but Edson Barboza, you know, more of a stepping stone. This is where you truly prove yourself, Lerone, okay, as he takes on Dan 50K Ige, also 33, from Hawaii. Of his 18 wins, 6 KOs, 5 subs. He's never been finished in all 8 of his professional fights. This is crazy. He has had so many canceled fights. He was supposed to fight with Anderson Brito on July 20th. That fell apart. Then he was supposed to fight Chepe Marisco. That fell apart. Then he didn't get a fight. After that, he ended up fighting Diego Lopez on 4 hours' notice. Okay, Dan Ige, so game to fight. He is truly incredible. Truly incredible. And he truly either loses to a top guy or he knocks you out. All right, loses to Calvin Kattar, knocks out Gavin Tucker in 22 seconds. Loses to Chan Sung Jung. Loses to Josh Emmett. Loses to Moser Avlov. Fights Damon Jackson, knocks him out. Fights Nate Landwehr. Nate Landwehr is just a different breed. Somehow survives. Fights Bryce Mitchell. Loses the decision. Fought in February. Knocked out Andre Feely in round 1 with a knockout. So, last loss to Diego Lopez in June. I think Dan Ige is super talented, but I just think what Lerone Murphy possesses is too much for Danny Gay to handle. I'm going to give this one to Lerone. I think he remains undefeated, but I just don't think he is the one to finish Danny Gay. Someone will finish him. It is not Lerone Murphy. I'm picking Lerone Murphy to win this one, but Danny Gay will give him a run for his money. After that, massive one at light heavyweight. The number one contenders fight is on the line as Magomed Ankalaev, your number one ranked light heavyweight, takes on the number five ranked Alexander Rocket Rackage. This is going to be a banger. A banger. I was going to say blowout for some reason. It's going to be a blowout party, I'll tell you that. Magomed, 19-1-1 with one no contest. Alexander Rakic, 14-4. 6'4 to 6'3 gives Alexander 1 inch in height, and he also has 3 inches in reach, 78 to 75. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Magomed, the minus 410. Holy cow, wow, his odds have swelled. Alexander Rakic, plus 320. Magomed Ankalaev, 32 years old, from Russia, currently on a 10-fight winning streak. 10 KOs and 5 subs make up his 19 professional victories. Last fought in January, where he knocked out Johnny Walker in round 2. Got a performance of the night for it. Magomed's had the craziest run. He was winning against Paul Craig, and he tapped with a second left. Magomed should probably be undefeated, but it happens. Since then, you know, he's got some crazy knockouts of Marcin Prochniak, Dulce Luciambula, twice over Ian Kudalaba. Went through a little streak of boring decisions over Nikita Krylov, Volkan Ozdemir, Thiago Santos. Then destroyed Anthony Smith. Then went to a draw against Jan Blachowicz, where he should have won the light heavyweight championship. No contest against Johnny Walker. Then knocked him out. People thought he should have fought Alex Pereira instead of Khalil Rountree. It's worked out this way, where he instead will take on Alexander Rakic. But I mean, Magomed Ankalaev, his accolades speak for himself. He is super talented, super dangerous, a big, scary Russian. Alexander, 32 years old, the plus 320 underdog, is from Austria. Has 9 KOs and 1 submission out of his 14 victories. Of his 4 losses, he has been finished in 3 of them, 2 by knockout, 1 by sub. Rakic, been with the UFC since 2017. You know, there's one point where he had some cool finishes of Jiwi Manua, Devin Clark, then lost a weird close decision to Volkan Ozdemir. But then, boring decision Anthony Smith. Boring decision Thiago Santos. Then, you know, him and Jan Blachowicz were actually in a banger of a main event in May of 2022, and he got injured in round 3. Had to take 2 years off, debuted back at UFC 300, came back, almost knocked out, was looking great against Jiří Procházka in round number 1, and then Jiří just landed that one big shot, knocks him down, and that was it. TKO for Jiří Procházka. But Rakic, back in action against Magomed Ankalaev, but it won't be enough. I'm sorry, Rakic, I was so high on you, but taking on Jan Blachowicz, taking on Jiří Procházka, those are 2 former champions, and you're taking on a guy, Magomed Ankalaev, who's going to be a future champion. That's right. It's Magomed all day. Probably by round 3 TKO. Might even hurt his leg or something. Might take him down. I just think where Magomed wants this fight to go, the fight will go. I think he is as good as people say he is, and I think he gets it done here. Magomed over Rakic. I'm excited for that one. And then, I don't even know if we're going to get this. I'm going to be honest. Magomed Ankalaev versus Rakic might become the new co-main event. I kid you not. The current co-main event, 5 rounds. Middleweight division, the number 3 ranked Robert Whittaker, and the number 13th ranked Khamzat Chimaev. I genuinely don't know if we're going to get to this fight. Khamzat Chimaev always seems to pull out right before a fight. I don't even know if we're going to get to it, but as of right now, Whittaker plus 185, Khamzat Chimaev minus 225. The Reaper, 27-7, Boers, 13-0. 6'2 to 6' gives Khamzat 2 inches in height. He also has 2 inches in reach, 75 inches is 73. Both men love the orthodox fighting position. Robert Whittaker, man. We'll start with him, the number 3 ranked middleweight contender, the former middleweight champion of the world, the Reaper, Robert Whittaker. 33 years old, from Australia. Of those 27 wins, he has 10 KOs and 5 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been finished 4 times. These 2 are actually supposed to fight on June 22nd. Instead, Khamzat pulled out due to illness. In stepped Ikram Alkhazarov, who got knocked out in under 2 minutes by Robert Whittaker. Whittaker, 2-0 in 2024, on a 2-fight losing streak. Man, he's been incredible. Whittaker, been with the company over a decade, since 2012. I mean, since coming to middleweight, he has only lost to 2 men. Adesanya twice, and Dricus du Plessis. That's 2 of your last 3 middleweight champions. All right? You know, a lot of people are calling for him to fight Sean Strickland. They keep trying to make this Khamzat Chimaev fight happen. And I give Whittaker a great chance to win against Khamzat Chimaev. I truly, truly do. I do not think the odds do him justice as a plus 185 underdog. I think it should be minus 150, minus 110 each. This is such an even fight. Such an even fight. And Whitaker, you know, he really only has lost to Adesanya and Duplessis, the champions. Other than that, Darren Till, Jared Cannonier, Kelvin Gastelum, Marvin Vettori, Paulo Costa. He's just gone through everyone else that hasn't become champion. So, truly, you have to beat Whitaker. Similar to Max Holloway. If you beat him, you will become a champion. Look at Volk. Volk had to beat him to become champion. Everyone else who's tried has not been able to. Just is how it goes. Whitaker, I really do give him a good shot. He is a striker through and through. We rarely see his grappling. And that's just the tail of the fight. You know, if this is on the feet, this is going to Whitaker. But if it goes to the ground, it's going to this man, Khamzat Borzchamayev. He used to be feared. We'll see if he can bring back that anger, whatever you want to call it. 30 years old, from Russia, but now inhabits the United Arab Emirates as his home. Of his 13 wins, 5 KOs, 6 subs. And he has had a record 6 canceled fights in the UFC. That's right. He has had 7 fights in the UFC, 6 canceled fights. He's almost tied right there. I mean, he's only ever been the distance twice in his career. Once against Gilbert Burns, last time out, October 2023, against Kamaru Usman. This dude once fought on 10 days' notice. He had 3 fights in 2020. Since then, 1 fight in 2021, 2 fights in 2022, 1 fight in 2023, and he's only going to get 1 in for 2024. I don't know what's happened to Khamzat Chimaev, but he's just never healthy. You know, he keeps getting sick. Not injuries, sick. Like, his immune system is completely damaged. I don't know, it makes me sad. I do enjoy watching Khamzat Chimaev fight. You know, it makes me sad knowing that he's not doing well. But, you know, I think you can power through it, get it done, and show up to fight night. Now, as for how the fight's going to play out, I mean, it's tough to say. Truly, I don't know how this fight's going to play out. I can look at how their last few fights have played out, okay? And Khamzat Chimaev against Gilbert Burns, that was prime Khamzat Chimaev going the distance. We could tell what he was going to do. Kevin Holland, he ragdolled him off the bat. That's where we were able to tell, okay? But he took a year off. He kind of changed. Kamaru Usman fight, he almost finished him round one. I mean, Khamzat Chimaev mauled Usman in round number one. 4 minutes, 35 seconds control time. Took him down twice. Couldn't get the submission, though. Truly tried his hardest, could not get the submission, all right? Now, you know, his striking's okay. Khamzat doesn't have bad striking, but I don't know how his chin's going to be against the guy in Robert Whittaker, okay? And Robert Whittaker, you know, striking against Paulo Costa, striking against Ikram Oksanev, striking against Duplessis, striking, all he does is strike, okay? The only time I've seen him lean on his grappling was against Kelvin Gastelum, Darren Till, and especially in that Adesanya rematch. I'm going to stay with Khamzat Chimaev. I'm going to root for him here, but this will probably be, you know, it really feels like if Khamzat Chimaev doesn't win here, he doesn't go on to become champion, that his run was kind of just, you know, a place in time back in 2020, 2021. So we're going to go with Whitaker. No, not Whitaker. We're going to go with Chimaev with a little round two submission. Actually, you know, it's round one or bust. I truly believe that. It's going to be, I'm going to put down Khamzat Chimaev submission round one, and it is either round one submission or bust for Khamzat Chimaev. If it goes past that, I think Whitaker gets a knock. I think you got to see that Khamzat Chimaev right out the bat shoot like crazy. But also another thing is Khamzat changed up his camp. Okay, he has a completely different regimen, a completely different camp. He's trying to fix his training, and we'll see if it pays off. We truly will. He's never fought anyone of Robert Whittaker's level. The most talented person he fought was Kamaru Usman. We saw that fight went. He could not finish Usman, okay? So this will be interesting. I'm excited. And it's just crazy that this isn't even the most anticipated fight of the card as we head to the main event. The number one ranked featherweight contender is not Max Holloway. He's ranked at number two, but he is your number 11 pound-for-pound fighter. Who is he fighting, though? None other than the number 4 pound-for-pound fighter, your current men's featherweight champion, the undefeated, the undeniable, the egotistical, he might be a narcissist, Ia El Matador Topira. That is right, your featherweight champion, Ia El Matador Topira, takes on Max Blessed Holloway. I'm going to be honest. As I go through the year, as I look through the year, you know, UFC 300 had some big fights. You know, your Aljamain Sterling fights, they were, not Aljamain, so your Sean O'Malley fights, they were big. Sean Strickland, Driscoll Duplessis, Duplessis Adesanya, they were some big fights. You know, every Alex Pereira fight this year was big. This is the biggest fight of the year. You know, Volk and Topira was big. This is bigger. this is insane. This is just, I can't believe this fight is happening. I really hope that both these guys stay healthy until Saturday at around 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time that this fight takes place, because history will be made. History will be made as Ito Piro will become the first man to knock out Max Holloway. I know, it's going to happen, but let's analyze real quick. All right, let's analyze real quick. Okay, Ito Piro, 15-0, Max Holloway, 26-7. 5'11", 5'7", Max got 4 inches in height. 69-inch reach, same reach, orthodox stance, same style. The height is the one of the key things here, you know. That's the only real difference here. Ito Piro, minus 250, Holloway, plus 195. Let's start with your champion. 27 years old, born in Germany, but he's been in Spain ever since he was a little boy. 5 KOs and 8 subs, 13 of his 15 wins by finish. And by the way, of those 15 wins, 9 first-round finishes. Ito Piro, I mean, he is currently 7-0 in the UFC. He has had, I think, of his 7 UFC fights, he's been the distance twice. Just twice. Other than that, knockouts of Damon Jackson. Knockouts of Ryan Hall, knockouts of Jai Hobart, knockout Volkanovski in February to become champion, fight of the night against Josh Emmett, submitted Bryce Mitchell. This guy's a killer, okay? And he speaks things into existence. Honestly, he is big on manifestation. You know, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know what the Bible says about manifestation. I don't like to mess with that stuff. You know, maybe affirmation, tell yourself that. But I mean, it is. I'm very interested to see how he performs here, okay? But Ito Piro, I'm high on him. I've been riding with him since the Bryce Mitchell fight. You know, I picked him against Ryan Hall. I picked him against Shai Herbert. You know, then I thought, you know, he's not as good as Bryce Mitchell. But then I knew after the Bryce Mitchell fight that he was going to be champion. Bested Josh Emmett, knocked out Volkanovski. I predicted round 2 knockout against Volkanovski. I'm a Ito Piro fan, but there's no easy coming here as he takes on one of the most, I think, the best boxer in UFC history. The 32-year-old from Hawaii, Max Blessed Holloway. Of his 26 wins, 12 knockouts, 2 subs. Of his 7 losses, you know, he was submitted once back when he was, how old was Max back in 2013? He was like 22 years old when he got submitted by Dennis. Actually, he was in Dustin Poirier. He submitted him when he was 21 years old. So, I mean, Max Holloway finished in his first UFC fight since then. I mean, he's never been dropped in the UFC, never been knocked out. He is incredible. Gaethje came the closest, but I think Topir is the one to do it. Holloway, I mean, there's so much to look at with Holloway, but let's start since, you know, the Volkanovski saga. Holloway, arguably, you know, his biggest rival, Volkanovski, he went 0-3 against. Okay, first fight, Volk won, and it was kind of like, okay. Second fight, crazy robbery. Volkanovski, I did not think, won that. Follows that up, fight of the night wins over Calvin Kattar and Yair Rodriguez, setting striking records. Then loses badly to Volk in July 2022, and we're kind of like, dang, maybe this is the downfall of Max Holloway. Takes on Arnold Allen in April 2023. Good performance. You know, it wasn't the Calvin Kattar, it wasn't the Yair Rodriguez, but, you know, it was still a good performance. Then fights Chan Sung Jung in August. Crazy fight of the night, knocks him out, retires him. Good fight. Then this year, UFC 300, Justin Gaethje. One of the craziest knockouts I've ever seen. It won fight of the night, it won knockout of the night. Max Holloway won UFC 300. Okay, a 1 second left in a 5-round fight knockout. It was insane, and it was just a crazy fight overall. He outboxed Gaethje the entire fight. It was insane. It's earned him a title shot here against Ito Piro. Holloway, ranked number 5 at lightweight as well. I mean, he's very incredible. It's just hard to tell. You know, as we look at Max Holloway's past opponents, I mean, you know, the Gaethje fight was the one where everyone's like, you know, if he touches you, you're going to sleep. Okay, with Chan Sung Jung, it wasn't like that. With Arnold Allen, with Volk, with Air, with Kattar. I mean, Holloway, I mean, maybe Dustin Poirier, but Holloway's never really fought one where it's pretty much like, you know, if this guy touches you, you're going to sleep. It's been pretty much, you know, he's going to outstrike you. And with Holloway, you know, I don't know if it's going to end in the first 2 rounds. I think it might actually go into the later rounds, but I think Topira catches him. I just think Topir's confidence is something that McGregor bestowed. People like to say, like, copying McGregor. I mean, you're just doing what he does, okay? And that is speak things into existence. And all Topir has said, I mean, he has 16-0 in his bio right now. He made a post saying, it's going to be an honor to be the first man to knock out Max Holloway, defend my championship, and, you know, become 16-0. Like, he's just tweeting that he's already done that. And that's insane to me. It's also impressive. I really like it. And I think Ito Piro gets it done. Now I got a round two knockout for you, Topura. Round one, round three, round four, maybe even round five. Wouldn't that be some round five knockout? But it's Topura all day for me. I'm not even a Max Holloway hater, but I legit like never have picked Max Holloway. Like, I'm gonna be honest. As I look, I think I picked him in every single Volkanovski fight. Okay, I did not think I did not think he beat Justin Gaethje. I honestly thought Arnold Allen might have had a shot. And I thought Calvin Kattar was going to beat him. But Holloway, I pick against him more often than not. It's hit or miss. But I truly believe Ia Topura will knock out Max Holloway. Take it to the bank. Lock it in. Make some money. There you have it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that'll do it. That is your UFC 308 predictions and previews. Also look at NFL Week 8. All sorts of NFL news, pop culture, new UFC fights. Lots of fun stuff. But yeah, should be a great time. I'm so excited for the weekend. It should be a blast. And man, this is card of the year. I know UFC 309, 310, they might be pretty good, but 308, it is just mwah, the chef's kiss. I think that's what they call it. Guys, have an amazing weekend. Conquer your life. Do what you do best. And yeah, next time I see you, maybe we'll be talking about how Holloway pulled off a crazy knockout of Ia Topura, and maybe we'll be saying, dang, Ia Topura knocked out Max Holloway. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.